I don't know where he's been the last few years, but the Edgar Underhay I saw at the Cat's Meow was not the smart, dapper gentleman I knew from before the war. Kitty blinked and nodded. I understand, Vivian. And thank you for being so honest. Vivian shook her head. He always said he was coming for you and Eloed. He always said your mother held his two biggest treasures. She shrugged her shoulders, making the diamante jewels on her lapel brooch throw tiny rainbows onto the tablecloth. The waiter returned and cleared the soup bowls, giving Kitty time to compose herself. And you're sure it was Edgar Underhay, although he had changed somewhat in appearance? Matt asked. Vivian released Kitty's hand and looked him in the eyes. Yes, it was Edgar. He was older, slightly shabbier. The diamond tie pin and the swagger had gone, but it was definitely him. I'd know him anywhere.
Do you think he might come to see me now?
Matt couldn't tell from Kitty's tone if she was excited or a little afraid of the prospect of meeting her father. The waiter brought the second course and set it in front of them.
I don't know, honey.
I'm surprised he hasn't tried to send word to you or your mother, Vivian said. He must know where you are. He has some kind of connection not far from here, I think. Her brow wrinkled. Unless he's found out about Eloed disappearing and thinks he's been gone too long, Matt murmured. He still wasn't sure about Vivian's story, and he wondered if she might be sounding out Kitty in preparation for Edgar's return. He couldn't tell from Kitty's face how she felt about the possibility of seeing her father again after so long an absence. The bit about treasure hadn't passed him by either, and he was certain Kitty would have picked up on it too. What was this so-called treasure that suddenly everyone appeared to want? Maybe enough to kill for. After luncheon, Kitty went back to her grandmother's suite. She called the hospital to inquire if Mrs. Craven was any better and learned she had been transferred to a private nursing home in Torquay to convalesce. Vivian's information had left her restless and confused. Was her father really in England? Why didn't he want to see her? Was he in some kind of trouble? Vivian's description had been that of a man who had lived a slightly disreputable life and had now fallen on hard times. She was no fool. She'd heard about Chicago, the speakeasies and the gangsters. The newspapers often carried lurid descriptions of some of the more disturbing incidents. Matt had gone to talk to Mickey about extra security precautions for the hotel, so Kitty decided to take some air along the embankment. She left a note at the front desk for Matt and set off at a leisurely pace, enjoying the breeze on her face and the welcome sights and sounds of normal life all around her. She nodded hello to some of the people she knew as she walked and paused to admire a baby in a perambulator. Pleasure craft made their way along the river, some carrying trippers out to see the castle at the mouth of the estuary. The sounds of chat and laughter reached her from the people on deck. Other boats chugged upstream with the sunlight sparkling on the whitewash. It was hard to believe that poor Cora had met such a terrible end here, in such a peaceful spot. A shiver danced along her spine at the thought. She had reached the boat float. The other big hotel in town was situated right opposite, near the shops and tea rooms.
Good afternoon, Miss Underhay.
The gentleman speaking to her raised his hat, and she recognized him as the stranger who had spoken to her the previous evening. His appearance was clean but slightly worn, like so many who had suffered a downturn in fortune since the Great War.
Good afternoon.
She went to continue with her walk, but to her surprise, he addressed her again.
I hope you don't mind my inquiry, but I am an old acquaintance of your grandmother, Mrs. Treadwell. May I ask after her health?
A prickle of unease tickled the nape of her neck.
My grandmother is well, thank you. She is away at present visiting family.
And your mother? Kitty swayed on her feet. I beg your pardon, you appear distressed. The stranger took hold of her arm and guided her to a nearby bench. Kitty sat and took a deep breath to recover her wits. I'm sorry, sir. Clearly you cannot have seen my grandmother for some time. My mother disappeared many years ago, and we are unsure of her whereabouts. It has been a number of years since anyone asked after her. She thought she heard him murmur, "So it is true." Forgive me, Miss Underhay. I did not mean to cause you distress. I have been abroad for some time for my health, and have only recently returned to the area. I had hoped to see your grandmother at the musical soiree last night. It is understandable, then, that you wouldn't know what had happened, Mr. She waited for him to give his name. Her curiosity was greatly piqued by the identity of this stranger, especially after Vivian's description of her father. This man would be the right age, had a faint accent and had been abroad. Her heart raced at the possibility, but yet she felt no connection to him. Mr. Kelly, his eyes locked with hers. Are you sure you are quite recovered, Miss Underhay? Yes, thank you. She stood and adjusted her skirts, brushing off a few flakes of paint from the bench seat. Are you staying in the area for long, Mr. Kelly? My grandmother hopes to return soon, and I'm sure she would like to renew an old acquaintance. Alas, I'm uncertain about how long I can stay. But I hope I shall see you again before I leave. He touched his hat, and before she knew it, he had disappeared from sight somewhere into the high street. Bother! Kitty stared after the direction in which he'd vanished for a few minutes. Who was he? The hesitation when she had asked his name meant she was pretty certain he really wasn't called Kelly. She hardly dared entertain the thought, but was that her father? He had matched Vivian's admittedly loose description. Or perhaps it was someone more sinister, attempting to find information about this mysterious treasure. There had never been any mention of treasure before, and the comment had been so vague her father may have been referring to herself and Eloed. The encounter had left her feeling even more unsettled, and without Matt at her side, vulnerable. She wondered if she should have told Inspector Greville about the attempt to push her into the road. My dear Miss Underhay. The unwelcome sound of Walter Cribbs's voice sent her spirits plummeting. She hoped he was not about to attempt any renewal of the unwelcome advances he'd made towards her at Christmas. Mr. Cribbs. The reporter moved in front of her, effectively blocking her from returning back towards the hotel unless she physically stepped around him. Sunlight glinted on his round, black-framed spectacles. Any news from the police on the arson attack on the Dolphin, or on the investigation of the murders of Cora Wakes and Mr. Blass? Kitty eyed him with distaste. Mr. Cribbs, surely those questions would be better put to Inspector Greville. He ignored her and carried on. Colin Wakes is still missing, and now a source has informed me that you have received threatening letters. His notebook and pencil were ready to take down her replies. I think your source is misinformed, Mr. Cribbs, and I have no idea about who the police may be looking for. Now, if you don't mind, I need to return to work. She made to walk forward, hoping he would move out of her way. What about the rumours of treasure? Walter's face was uncomfortably close to hers, and she noticed a small pimple on the side of his nose. Treasure? Kitty did her best to appear baffled and to prevent herself from recoiling at his proximity. Another mention of treasure coming out of the blue. Where had these rumours begun? An unpleasant smile spread across Walter's face. Treasure. A fabulous jewel entrusted to your mother. Nausea rose in her stomach. I know nothing of any such nonsense. My mother left nothing of any value. She has been missing for 17 years. What is all this nonsense about a duel?
Walter drew back a little. Forgive my questioning, Miss Underhay, but my source suggests that the jewel is real and various parties are searching for it.
Kitty spotted Matt approaching and relief swept through her.
Matthew!
Walter glanced over his shoulder and a flicker of annoyance appeared to cross his face.
Is Mr. Cribbs bothering you, Kitty?
Just doing my job.
Walter returned his notebook and pencil to the pocket of his jacket.
He appears to believe that my mother had some fabulous jewel in her possession, and that this is connected with what happened to poor Cora and that other man.
Kitty glared at Walter. Matt raised his eyebrows and stared at Walter, who now appeared less confident with Matt looming over him.
What would give you such an extraordinary idea? Matt asked.
Two expert jewel cutters in Dartmouth, one of them dead, and rumours of a long-lost jewel worth £20,000. You know a newsman's sources must remain confidential, Walter blustered.
Matt leaned in closer to Walter. I'm sure Inspector Greville would like to speak to your sources. I suggest you hand over any information you may have to the police and stop bothering Miss Underhay. £20,000, my foot. Your informant must be mad or drunk. He leaned back.
I'm just doing my job. There's no need to get nasty.
Walter's voice came out as a squeak, and he nodded to Kitty and scurried off.
Chapter 16.
Ugh, that man is such a creep.
Kitty shuddered.
He reminds me of one of those little black beetles, scuttling around the place, always creeping out from some damp or dirty corner.
I know what you mean, Matt scowled. It bothers me more that this rumour of some treasure or gem appears to be spreading all over Dartmouth.
£20,000, that is ridiculous.
Where did this nonsense start, I wonder? He fell into step beside her, and they strolled back together towards the hotel. Kitty found his presence reassuring after all the upsets of the day. Who do you suppose his informant is?
Could be any one of a number of people. Someone at the police station who saw the last letter? Vivian Delaware and her husband? Even Cora?
I met someone else whilst I was out.
She told him of her encounter with the mysterious Mr. Kelly. He shot a glance at her.
You think he may be your father?
Kitty's footsteps faltered.
I don't know. I suppose I have to entertain the possibility.
Having confessed the idea aloud, she felt a little better. She knew Matt wouldn't ridicule or poo-poo the possibility. She started to move again.
Be careful, Kitty. I agree you can't rule out that he may be Edgar Underhay, but equally he could be an opportunist or a con man, or even someone in league with Vivian and her husband.
In other words, trust no one.
A short time ago, she had struggled to trust Matt. When her whole life had been constructed around uncertainty, she had no difficulty in being suspicious.
Exactly.
Kitty didn't see the mysterious Mr. Kelly at Miss Delaware's next performance, although Walter Cribbs made an appearance. She successfully avoided him all evening, although she thought she saw Hubert Fargin whispering to him in a corner of the ballroom. Matt had been making discreet inquiries to try to trace Mr. Kelly, but so far he wasn't known at any of the lodging houses or hotels. Thankfully, there had also been no further letters or notes, although her heart skipped a beat every time she checked the post. Bobby was at the reception desk, collecting messages the next day, when Inspector Greville arrived in the foyer. The lobby was quiet, with her guests mainly being gone for the day.
Inspector Greville, you have news?
She noticed Bobby freeze momentarily as she greeted the policeman.
Are you free for a moment, Miss Underhay?
He eyed Bobby, who appeared now to be leisurely reading his post at the end of the desk.
Of course. I'll ask one of the girls to cover for me.
She rang the bell and handed over to one of the maids.
Could you get Alice to bring a tray of tea to my grandmother's suite, please, and ask Mr. Bryant to join us?
Come upstairs to the salon, Inspector. She led the way to the elevator, pulling open the metal gate. Inspector Greville followed her inside, removing his hat as he entered. Kitty entered her grandmother's salon and took a seat. Matt and the tea tray arrived to join them within minutes.
Has there been a development, Inspector?
Matt asked as soon as the maid had left the room. Inspector Greville stroked his moustache thoughtfully.
Mrs. Craven's house was ransacked last night. It was the maid's half day off, and she had attended the pictures with her young man. He walked her home, and when they arrived at the house, the lights were on downstairs. Naturally, they were alarmed, but when they entered, the thieves had already left.
Kitty gasped. How frightful! Was much taken? Any damage done? Her mind raced even as she asked the questions. The burglary had to be linked somehow to the other crimes, or why else would the inspector be calling? She had a horrid feeling that she knew exactly what the thieves had been looking for.
Miss Underhay, I believe Mrs. Craven was storing two boxes for your grandmother that contained your mother's possessions?
Although he posed it as a question, Kitty knew he already knew the answer.
Yes. When the hotel was undergoing renovations a few years ago, Mrs. Craven kindly offered to store them for my grandmother. She didn't want them around, but at the same time couldn't bring herself to dispose of them either.
The inspector nodded.
May I ask what the boxes contained?
Kitty sighed.
Clothes, a few books, nothing of any significance or value.
My grandmother only kept them because she thought I might want something to remember my mother by if she didn't return. She found it so upsetting having them at the hotel, she wanted them out of sight. I think she was afraid having them around might distress me.
There was no jewelry or ornaments of any kind concealed within the boxes?
No, Inspector, not so far as I know.
Matt cleared his throat.
I take it the thieves were looking for Kitty's mother's possessions.
Inspector Greville took a sip of tea.
Nothing was stolen. The silverware and pictures were left untouched. A few small items of jewellery that hadn't been locked in the safe were also left behind. The cash in the kitchen, which was used to pay household expenses, was also undisturbed. Only the boxes were searched.
This is ridiculous.
Kitty sprang to her feet and paced the few short steps to her grandmother's bureau.
My mother left nothing of value, nothing.
And yet my constables tell me there are several rumours sweeping the town that a priceless gem was entrusted to your mother for safekeeping and that someone has now returned to collect it. There are suggestions that she may have been harmed because she refused to reveal where it was stashed.
Kitty sank back into her seat. But who would have given her such a thing? And why would they look for it now, after all these years?
The inspector had placed his cup back on the table. He leaned forward and templed his fingers together, his gaze fixed on her face.
We are led to believe that your father, Edgar Underhay, acquired a very valuable uncut ruby from some gentleman in Chicago before the war and entrusted it to your mother on the understanding that he would recover it at some point in the future.
You use the word acquired, Inspector?
Matt asked. The corners of the policeman's mouth twitched upwards.
We are not sure that it was acquired legitimately, something to do with a poker game. This was not advisable, as the gentleman who had claims on the stone is quite well known in certain circles in Chicago. He let it be known that he expected it to be returned.
A gasp escaped Kitty. A Chicago gangster and a stolen gem. The whole thing was preposterous. Except Cora was dead and someone had searched both the hotel and Mrs. Craven's home. But why now? Why after all this time?
The grim smile on the inspector's lips grew tighter. All the main parties concerned have only recently been released from prison and are keen to recover the gem.
Was my father in prison? Kitty asked.
He is certainly known to the authorities, but no, I don't believe he has been imprisoned recently. However, the officer I spoke to in Chicago believed he has sustained some major financial losses lately. I appreciate that Edgar has not been a part of your life, Miss Underhay, but he is now a person of interest in my investigations, and if he should be in touch with you, please let me know.
Matt whistled. You've no doubt also heard, Inspector, that there have been reported sightings of Edgar Underhay in London.
All of which adds credibility to the rumours, no doubt. Miss Underhay, I will be asking my men to keep a close watch on the hotel and strongly advise you not to leave the premises alone until this matter is resolved.
I'm sure Kitty will be very careful.
Matt gave her a meaningful look, and colour crept into her cheeks as she remembered her stroll by the river the previous day.
You may wish to trace a Mr. Kelly. I've had no success so far, but he has approached Kitty twice now, and we suspect he may have some kind of connection to whatever is going on. He claimed an acquaintance with her grandmother, but seemed unaware of Kitty's mother's disappearance.
Thank you. I agree, that would appear strange.
We're also still looking for Colin Wakes. Again, there are rumours that he has been seen locally.
Should he contact you, or you hear anything, please let me know.
Matt showed Inspector Greville out and returned to the office.
Suppose this Mr. Kelly is my father?
The words burst from Kitty and she pressed her palms together to stop her hands from trembling.
You could have put him in real danger if there are mobsters running around Dartmouth killing people and looking for something I don't have.
A sob escaped her. Matt hunkered down in front of her and captured her hands in his.
Kitty, we don't know who this man is. He may be a murderer. You are in danger because of him. You don't owe him any loyalty.
He squeezed her fingers.
I honestly don't know what to think. First, I believe my father is probably dead or in America. Then he's in London. Now he may be here in Dartmouth, but he's apparently both a coward of the worst kind and very possibly a convicted felon and a gambler.
She shook her head as a tear escaped to trickle down her cheek.
This will all get sorted out soon. Inspector Greville is a good man, and I will be with you until he has apprehended the person responsible, whether or not that is your father.
Matt drew a handkerchief from his pocket and offered it to her, trying not to think about how he was now offering her the very reassurances he'd told himself not to. Kitty dabbed away the tear, comforted by his proximity and his kindness. His gaze locked with hers and her heart skipped a beat. He straightened up and turned away.
Try and get some rest, Kitty. I'll be downstairs. I need to check on a few things.
Before she could say anything, he left, and she wondered if she had imagined the expression she'd seen in his eyes when he'd comforted her. Matt was thoughtful as he strolled down the broad, polished oak staircase to the ground floor. His reaction to Kitty's proximity disturbed him. After Edith's death, he had never anticipated that he might feel something for another woman again. As he was about to descend the final few steps, he spotted two people deep in conversation, which held him to his place for a moment. The tall, elegant, flamboyant figure of Vivian Delaware appeared to be engaged in a tete-a-tete with the stubby, straw-boated Hubert Fargin. A most unlikely pairing. The couple passed the bottom of the staircase without glancing in his direction. Thinking swiftly, He slipped down the final few steps and dodged quickly into the back office behind the desk, leaving the door slightly ajar. Fortunately, the girl on reception was preoccupied with a new arrival and her lapdog and didn't notice his actions.
"Really, Mr. Fargin, I have no idea what you mean. I know nothing of the matter."
Vivian's voice carried to his hiding place. She sounded indignant, but also slightly shaken, and Matt wondered what the precursor to her reply had been. He risked a quick peek through the gap between the door and the frame to see Miss Delaware marching away, pulling on her gloves as she walked. Hubert merely appeared thoughtful as he strolled past Matt's hiding place and out of the hotel. Matt was about to emerge into the lobby when he realized that he hadn't been the only voyeur of the little scene. Bobby was standing in the shadows near the elevator, and he didn't look very happy with Hubert Fargin. In fact, Matt thought he looked downright murderous. Chapter 17. Miss Delaware seldom appeared downstairs before midday, preferring to breakfast in her room as her show finished quite late. Matt was therefore surprised to encounter her outside the hotel at a little before 10, the day after he'd witnessed her meeting with Hubert Fargin.
"Captain Bryant, may it?"
She placed a gloved hand on his arm.
"May I speak with you in private?"
He tried to hide his surprise and offered her his arm.
"Shall we take the morning air? Will your husband be joining us?"
They strolled along the embankment as if admiring the view along the river. The walkway was still quiet with a few people about. On the water, the boatmen were preparing their vessels.
"Bobby has some business matters to attend to. I had one in my head, so I came out to get some air."
"How can I help you, Miss Delaware?"
He was sure she had been loitering, hoping to catch him. He had no doubt that her maid or one of the hotel staff would have told her of his habit of going for a morning stroll after breakfast.
"Oh, do call me Vivian, please, honey. Miss Delaware makes me feel so old."
"Very well, Vivian."
He waited for her to continue.
"You appear very close to Kitty. She's such a sweet little thing, and I don't want to see her get hurt."
Matt frowned. The hairs at the nape of his neck were prickling, and he knew something was off kilter.
"In what way do you mean?"
"Listen, Edgar Underhay is here in Dartmouth. I saw him yesterday. I know about the jewel he left with Kitty's mother, and I'm sure he must be here to try and recover it."
Matt stopped.
"Is that what Hubert Fargin was discussing with you yesterday?"
Vivian released his arm, a look of fury crossing her face.
"That unpleasant little chancer. He was fishing for information, hinting he knew something about that woman who was found in the river."
They paused for a moment, looking out at the dark water rushing along just a few feet from where they stood.
"Did he say what he knew?" Matt asked.
"No, just a load of unpleasant hints."
Vivian held her chin high.
"He was trying to blackmail you?"
She snorted.
"Hell no, what with? Like I said, the man was fishing for something, like he thought I might know something. Absurd."
Matt was not convinced by her denial. Hubert may have been fishing for information, but her demeanor when he mentioned blackmail had been telling.
"You said he knew about the jewel."
She darted a quick glance at him.
"That's why I'm worried for Kitty. She needs to put that thing in a safe place. There are people who will stop at nothing to get their hands on it. That chunk of a rock was Eddie's insurance, and I'd say he wants it back now. His coming here is pointing right at Kitty."
"Is that chunk of rock, as you call it, the real reason why you took this engagement?"
Her gaze shifted from his.
"That would be ridiculous. I was curious to see Eddie and Eloed's girl. I hope to renew my friendship with Eloed.
I would have expected her to have gotten rid of that gem a long time ago if Edgar hadn't been back for it. Perhaps it was the army training, but Matt just knew that she was lying.
Did you ever see the jewel?
It didn't look like much, just a chunk of rock. It hadn't been cut. Edgar showed it to me once when he'd had a few, just before Eloed and Kitty sailed. He won it in a poker game.
And seeing him in the club in London, you guessed why he was here and where he would be headed.
What makes you think Eloed didn't have it with her when she disappeared?
Matt knew his tone was scornful.
I think you should return to the hotel.
Vivian faced him, her eyes blazing.
You can think what you like, Mr. Bryant, but Kitty's life may be in danger over that jewel. Edgar isn't the only person to want to get his hands on it, and there are people who want to get their hands on Eddie, and they may try to use Kitty to do that.
Thank you for the warning. Matt tipped the brim of his hat to her and strode away towards the town. He made straight for the police station. He wanted to speak to Inspector Greville as soon as possible. He was shown into a small, rather dark back room containing a desk and a couple of chairs that the inspector appeared to be using as an office.
Captain Bryant, good morning.
Matt told the inspector of his conversation with Vivian Delaware.
I take it you don't believe her motivation for speaking with you, Greville asked.
No, sir. I think she may have been trying to establish if Kitty had found the stone or had contact with her father. Although I do believe she is correct to think that Kitty might be in danger.
The inspector leaned back in his chair, tapping the end of his pencil on the desk as he thought.
I've increased the patrols and Miss Underhay appears to be a sensible young woman. I've men searching the area, making house inquiries to try and trace this Mr. Kelly, and also to try and find Colin Wakes. That wretched reporter appears to be everywhere, though, asking questions. I'd like to know who told him about the jewel, although I suppose it could have come from a number of sources.
Walter Cribbs. Yes, I suppose this is a big news story. He certainly seems very well informed.
The inspector didn't appear impressed.
Miss Underhay and her grandmother know nothing about this supposed jewel?
No, sir. At least Kitty definitely doesn't. I'm not sure about her grandmother. I always get the feeling she may have not told me everything.
I see. And you say Miss Delaware was in conversation with Mr. Fargin, and he hinted that he knew something about Cora's death?
Yes, sir.
In that case, I think we need to speak to our friend Hubert and see what he has to tell us.
Greville had barely finished speaking when the telephone rang.
What? I see. Yes, on our way.
He placed the receiver back on the handset.
It seems we are too late, Captain Bryant. Mr. Fargin has been found dead, murdered inside his booth.
Matt scrambled to his feet and joined the inspector as they headed back towards the riverbank. It took a matter of minutes to reach the green and yellow turret-shaped booth where Hubert Fargin sold tickets for his motor coach tours. A small knot of interested bystanders had gathered nearby, kept at bay by a sturdy, ruddy-cheeked constable. Matt tagged along with the inspector as he approached the small booth.
Where is he?
Inside, sir. Sergeant said to leave everything till you got here. The doctor is on his way.
The booth was still shuttered with the door slightly ajar.
Who found him?
The inspector surveyed the scene.
The errand boy from the grocer's. Mr. Fargin had ordered some bread, cheese, and fruit. It was a regular order, and the lad came down, knocked on the door. It swung open, and he found Mr. Fargin dead inside.
The constable pointed to a young boy, sitting white-faced, on a nearby doorstep talking to the sergeant. Inspector Greville nodded and opened the door to the booth carefully with a gloved hand. Matt followed behind him as the constable shielded the scene from the bystanders with his body. Matt did his best not to recoil from the sight that greeted him,
Hubert Fargin lay sprawled half off the high wooden chair he used for taking ticket sales. The sticky, metallic scent of blood reached Matt, and it was all he could do not to gag. It brought back too many memories, images of other scenes with that terrible scent. Faces of friends and comrades flashed through his mind. Hubert looked startled, as if he had not expected his assailant to strike him down, but the dull black hilt of a large knife buried in his chest told its own story. Matt was relieved when the inspector closed the door again.
The doctor should be here in a moment. Constable, please move these people on, after you've checked if any of them saw or heard anything suspicious and taken their details.
Relieved he no longer had to look at Hubert's body, Matt sucked in a lungful of air. He had seen too many bodies, too much death. The bystanders were grumbling as the constable shooed them away. Amongst them was the black-coated figure of Walter Cribbs, scribbling away in his notebook as he talked to the people. The doctor's car drew up, and the inspector accompanied him into the booth. Matt stayed outside and lit a cigarette. He would wait until the corpse had been removed before asking the inspector about the doctor's thoughts. A hearse drew up behind the doctor's car, and a few minutes later, the undertakers were given the nod to remove the late Hubert Fargin from his booth. Greville joined him.
Dr. Carter puts the time of death no earlier than about 2 hours ago.
That ties in with the time Hubert normally reached his booth every morning. Matt finished his cigarette, dropping the stub and grinding it out with his toe.
I thought so. The blood was still viscous. No clues from the knife. Looks like a common or garden kitchen knife. The kind they sell at the local store. The boy didn't see or hear anything suspicious. He said the ferry hadn't come over when he arrived with the food for Fargin's lunch.
The sound of the hearse door slamming signaled that Hubert Fargin had been removed.
There didn't appear to be any signs of a struggle. It looks as if Fargin let his murderer into the booth.
Suggesting it was either someone he knew or someone he was expecting, Matt said. He wondered where Vivian had been before she had waylaid him. Even more importantly, where was Bobby?
There appeared to be no papers or documents other than the ticket pouch for the tour company. No signs of anything being taken or of a search being made.
The inspector stroked his moustache.
This is a most serious turn of events. I'm going to Mr. Fargin's lodgings to see if there is anything there which could shed any light on his death. Captain Bryant, I suggest you return to the Dolphin and stay with Miss Underhay. The killer is getting bolder, and if this man, Kelly, attempts to contact her, I need to know immediately.
Of course, sir. Matt cut through the town to return to the Dolphin. The scent of blood was still in his nostrils, and he found it hard to reconcile the normal everyday hustle and bustle of the town with the horror he had just witnessed. Coming so soon after seeing Cora's bloated features, all the buried horrors of the war were pushing to the front of his mind. He knew he couldn't return to the hotel in this frame of mind. He needed some time and space to think. He retraced his steps until he reached St. Saviour's Church. Finding the huge carved medieval door standing open, he stepped inside and took a seat at the back of the church. The interior of the church was old, the woodwork carved and painted in reds and golds. He was dimly aware of the curious gaze of the cleaner mopping the entrance. Closing his eyes, he allowed the sanctuary of the ancient space to enfold and calm him. Gradually, the smell of death that seemed to have followed him from the booth was replaced by the lavender aroma of the beeswax polish being diligently applied to the pews. He wasn't certain how long he had been there, but the cleaner had almost finished her chores. At least now his hands had stopped shaking, and his heart rate and breathing were back to normal. Matt smiled apologetically and slipped a donation into the offerings box as he left the church. He wasn't a religious man. Not anymore. The war had seen to that. But he found the space inside the church soothing to his nerves. With luck, it might mitigate the nightmares that he knew would inevitably haunt him in his sleep later.
Chapter 18. Matt took his time walking back to the hotel. He needed more space to fully recover from seeing Hubert Fargen's body inside the booth. The time inside the church had helped, but he wasn't ready yet to talk to Kitty. His feelings for her when he had comforted her the other day had caught him by surprise. Without thinking, he had spoken to her the way he and Edith had used to talk to each other. He paused on the embankment and stared out across the water. He and Edith had been so young when they had married, but so happy. The war had accelerated their courtship and marriage, and the arrival of baby Betty had set the seal on their happiness. Until the day it had all been taken away. He'd never thought he might one day be open to having that same kind of love and companionship again.
Captain Bryant!
Mickey, the maintenance man, called him as soon as he entered the lobby. It looked as if he had been loitering, waiting for his return.
What's the matter, Mick?
He'd asked Mickey to look out for anything he thought might be unusual or suspicious around the hotel.
I think there's something funny going on round the back of the hotel.
Mick's tanned and grizzled features contorted in a frown. Matt guessed the elderly man was struggling to explain what he thought was wrong.
Better show me what you mean.
He followed Mickey through the hotel, along the service corridor and out through the busy kitchen, past the chefs and potboy, into the yard where the fire had occurred. The soot had been scrubbed away from the bricks and the yard floor washed.
I've been keeping my eyes open like you asked, Captain. Come over here, sir.
He took Matt across to the old wooden gate that sealed one of the smugglers' tunnels in the cliff face.
Have a look at that lock.
Matt could see what he meant. The padlock looked shinier than before, and there was a thin film of oil around the top. It contrasted with the faded, blistered paintwork of the door, still bearing soot marks from the fire.
Have you got the key for this, Mickey?
The old man fished a huge ring of keys from his belt and sorted through the bunch.
I reckon it might be this one.
He inserted the key into the lock. The key turned easily and he unclipped the padlock.
Ain't nobody supposed to have been in here for about 5 years now, at least.
Matt watched as Mickey opened the door. On a small ledge inside the tunnel was a glass storm lantern. Mickey lifted it out, peered and sniffed.
Been primed and used recently.
Matt produced his cigarette lighter and ignited the wick. Mickey held the lantern in front of him and they ventured into the tunnel. Sweat trickled down Matt's back as he entered into the confined space. Today seemed to be the day that he was confronting all his demons at once. More horrific memories of being buried in mud in the trenches flooded into his mind. The constant fear of being buried alive, entombed beneath the boards used for shoring up the sides and the layers of heavy, glutinous soil. To his relief, after about 20 yards, the tunnel opened out into a larger space that looked as if it might once have been a natural cave.
They smugglers used to store some barrels here back in the old days.
Mickey lifted the lantern up so they could look around. The yellow light flickered and played over the rough red rock face. In the corner, Matt spotted a bundle of what looked like cloth.
Over here, Mick.
Mickey followed him with the light. The bundle comprised of some blankets, a small bag containing a change of clothes, a packet of sandwiches wrapped in greaseproof paper, a tin mug, and a bottle of beer. Melted stubs of candles stood on a ledge nearby.
Somebody been sleeping in here, Mickey said.
But who? And how did they get the key to access this area? Matt checked around the cave and the exit tunnel which led further into the cliff.
Where does this come out, Mick? Below yon castle, but you have to wait for low water. Come high tide, the entrance floods. 'Tis dangerous.
How many people know about it?
Mickey shrugged, the movement making the lantern light bob and weave.
Dunno. 'Tis mainly the older ones now, I suppose. In the war, no one could get near it, like, and Mrs. Treadwell has kept this end locked for years, especially since Miss Ellawood went missing.
Matt knew the castle dated back to the 1300s, so there had to be other passageways connected with it, and probably with the Church of St. Petroc, which stood beside the castle.
We'd better get out of here.
Mickey grunted his assent, and the two men made their way back out into the sunlight. Matt automatically reached for his cigarettes as soon as he was free of the cramped, dark confines of the tunnel. His hand trembled as he lit up.
Put the lantern back, Mickey, and relock the door. I'll alert Inspector Greville and see if he will set a watch to catch whoever is using the tunnel. Are there any other ways, in or out, that you know of?
There used to be a regular warren of tunnels. Some was dead ends, and some have caved in over the years, or the entrances have been lost with the building works for the town. I don't remember there being one still open to this one, other than that one by the castle, and you need a boat for that.
I'd better tell Miss Underhay what's going on.
Mickey nodded.
I'll keep my eyes open till they puts one of they police on to watch.
Matt thanked him and set off back inside the hotel. Whoever was using the tunnel was well set up and had to have been given access to a key. The obvious suspect was Colin Wakes, but why would he be hiding in the tunnel? His mother's house would be empty, and he had no reason to evade the law, at least no reason as far as Matt knew. Colin may have a dodgy past, but he wasn't in trouble this time. Or was he? He stopped off at the reception desk to write a note to Inspector Greville before giving one of the kitchen porters a few coins to take it to the police house. Kitty was in the ballroom, standing at one of the tables with Mrs. Homer, the head of the housekeeping staff.
I've been trying to sort out the curtains, table linen and the decor, ready for Saturday's masked ball. It's Vivian's finale before she returns to America, and then I've a troop of acrobats coming for 2 weeks to entertain the guests.
Her cheeks were flushed, and she had a small streak of dust on one cheek. She added another bundle into the housekeeper's arms and dismissed her.
Where have you been all morning? Mickey was looking for you.
It's all right, he found me.
Something in his tone must have warned her that something was wrong.
What is it? Has something else happened?
The colour drained from her face.
Hubert Fargin was found murdered this morning.
How? Where?
She sank down on one of the small gilt chairs.
Stabbed in his booth.
Inspector Greville is down there now. He saw her swallow.
Does he have any idea who may have done it? Or why?
He's still looking for Colin Wakes and this Mr. Kelly, if only to clear them of any involvement.
He knew she must be worried in case her father was somehow implicated in this latest tragedy. She nodded.
Yes, I suppose so. Oh, it's so awful, Matt. Poor Mr. Fargin.
Kitty, there's something else.
He told her of his and Mickey's discovery in the tunnel.
It could be Colin.
Cora could have given him a key and kept him supplied with food from the kitchen.
He could be the one that set the fire. It has to be someone local, and he would be the obvious suspect. Oh, but why? None of this makes sense. It's so horrible to think about what is happening at the hotel. I miss Graham so much right now. It's frightening, Matt. That's two people close to be murdered, and if you hadn't rescued me from that coal truck, it could have been my fate too.
I've sent a message to Inspector Greville. Mickey is keeping an eye on the door until they get a policeman in place to keep watch.
Kitty shivered and rubbed the tops of her arms.
Someone just walked over my grave. I got goosebumps. I hope they catch whoever is responsible for this soon. Do you think Hubert did know something about who killed Cora?
Matt rubbed his chin. I don't know.
Greville is checking his lodgings, but clearly someone must have believed he knew something, or else why kill him? And it might be to do with this gem that I know nothing at all about and don't have. Kitty shuddered.
Horrid. Absolutely horrid.
She buried her face in her hands. Come on, let's go and get some lunch. If you're a good girl, I might treat you to a cream scone later. He deliberately kept his tone light and teasing, hoping it would lift her spirits. He decided not to share Vivian's information with her just yet. She was already concerned about her father. She didn't need to worry even more. She accompanied him along the corridor towards the dining room.
I'll join you shortly. I need to freshen up.
She waved her dusty hands at him and grinned. I'll see you there. Bobby was in his usual spot, loitering in reception near the elevator, his gaudy checked suit visible in the shadows. Matt approached him from behind. Vivian not with you? He asked, clapping a friendly hand on the man's shoulder. The rotund little man jumped into the air in surprise.
No, not yet. I'm just waiting for her. You know how she likes her beauty sleep.
Oh, she was out and about quite early this morning. I met her taking the air. Bobby appeared flustered, small beads of sweat forming on his hairline.
Ah, yes, I was busy this morning. Business, you know.
Of course. I'm curious, do you manage any other acts, or does Miss Delaware keep you busy? Bobby produced a large yellow silk handkerchief and began to mop his brow and around his neck.
Goodness me, hot today, isn't it? Oh, I have a few other acts, you know, as well as Vivian to look out for. Contracts to check, you know.
Must be a difficult life, living out of a suitcase, traveling about. Bobby seemed to relax a little.
Yes, it can be, but it's more difficult in America. The color bar, you know?
He waved his hands vaguely. Matt suspected that Bobby and Vivian would encounter a great deal of prejudice and obstacles were their marriage to be widely known.
I expect that's why Miss Delaware retains her own name? I try to get contracts overseas where I can. London is easier, and Paris, of course.
But this time you are returning to America? Matt asked. Bobby fidgeted, shifting uneasily from foot to foot.
Business calls. I have my other acts to manage, and this is a long-standing obligation.
The penny dropped for Matt. An obligation to the kind of people you can't refuse? Bobby's lips quirked.
You could say it would be better to be obliging.
Chapter 19. Bobby melted away as soon as Kitty appeared, the dust smudge on her cheek gone and her lipstick renewed.
I thought you would have gone into lunch.
I ran into Bobby. We were chatting.
Oh?
She raised a perfectly arched eyebrow.
Let's go and eat and I'll tell you all about it.
In the dining room, Matt took a seat opposite Kitty. The room was fairly quiet, with many guests out for the day, so there was a low level of chatter in the room. They had just finished the first course when a maid came scurrying into the dining room and straight to their table.
Oh, miss, I'm so sorry to disturb you, but you need to come right away, miss.
The girl kept her voice low and cast a nervous gaze around the room, as if afraid any of the other diners might hear her.
What's wrong, Alice? Kitty set her glass back on the table. Your room, miss.
The girl looked distressed, her fingers worrying at the sides of her apron. Matt jumped to his feet.
You'd better show us what's happened.
Kitty joined him as they hurried up the staircase, the maid explaining breathlessly as they walked.
I went to clean your room, miss, and the door was open.
The maid's cleaning cart was outside the door to Kitty's room. Matt could see that the lock on the door had been forced, splintering the wood.
Was anyone up here when you arrived?
No, sir, it were all quiet.
The maid's expression was a mix of excitement and fear.
Kitty gasped aloud when she looked into her room.
What on earth?
Everything was disturbed. All the drawers were out of her chest, the contents strewn across the floor. Her clothes were torn from the hangers and dumped. Even the mattress on her bed was skewed, as if someone had looked beneath it. The lock on the drawer of her bedside cabinet had also been broken, and the scanty contents of her jewel box tipped carelessly out.
Clearly no ordinary robbery, Matt murmured.
I'm so sorry, Miss Underhay.
The maid hovered uncertainly in the doorway as Kitty made her way carefully into her room.
Leave us for a minute, while Miss Underhay checks to see if anything has been taken.
Matt fumbled in his jacket pocket for a notebook and pen. Can you please take this message to Inspector Greville? Alfie, the kitchen boy, knows where to find him. The young maid took the note and vanished.
Who could have done this?
Kitty stared around the room.
Oh!
She let out an anguished cry and bent to retrieve an object from the floor.
Matt, my mother's darling little clock, it's broken.
She placed the carved wooden cuckoo clock down carefully on the bed. Dark wood, with a typical Black Forest carved bear and tree decorating the front, the clock was nothing special other than the sentimental associations it held for Kitty. The fretwork on the top had been broken. The hands had come off, and he could see the weights that hung from the chains below the clock had been damaged, probably when the thief had tossed it away.
What's that?
He peered more closely at one of the weights. He assumed they were made of wood, like the clock, but the fall had revealed they were painted papier-mâché, designed to resemble fir cones. Kitty looked more closely. There's something inside the weight. She picked up the clock and pulled at the damaged covering. Instead of the more usual lead, something else appeared. A dark red, rough rock that glittered as the light from the window caught its surface. The size of a small pigeon egg, the gem nestled in her palm.
It was here all the time, Kitty whispered.
Voices could be heard approaching in the corridor, so Kitty quickly slipped the jewel into the pocket of her cardigan and covered the clock with one of her dresses. Inspector Greville was at the doorway, accompanied by Alice, the young red-headed maid who had been dispatched with the note.
Is anything missing, Miss Underhay?
Kitty shook her head. Not as far as I can see, Inspector. My jewellery is scattered about, but it all appears to be here. I have nothing else of any value in my room.
No witnesses? No one heard or saw anything suspicious?
No, sir. Well, this is a quiet time of day. Most of the guests are gone for the day or are taking luncheon in the dining room. This floor isn't used by guests, so apart from the staff, when they come to clean or return laundry, no one would be here. The inspector nodded.
You think it's someone familiar with the layout and routine of the hotel?
It would appear so. Matt was frustrated with himself. He should have realized that as the people searching for the ruby became increasingly desperate, they would try Kitty's room once more. They should have come and searched again themselves, even though Kitty had clearly been unaware of the ruby's hiding place.
And only this room was searched. No damage to your room, Mr. Bryant? Or that of Mrs. Treadwell?
The inspector asked.
What order were the rooms cleaned?
I did Mr. Bryant's room first, it being further along the corridor, and Mrs. Treadwell's rooms is on the first floor. There was nothing.
The maid spoke quickly, as if anxious that she should not be blamed for the happenings of the day. Matt caught Kitty's gaze, and she gave a barely imperceptible shake of her head, warning him not to tell the policeman of the discovery of the ruby. Inspector Greville examined the broken door lock and damaged door jamb.
Most likely a crowbar or lever of some kind.
Yes, we increased security, so perhaps they couldn't obtain the key. Or, of course, it could be someone different, Matt observed, thinking through the implications of this new development. Shall we go down to my grandmother's suite?
Kitty said. Can Alice begin to clean up my room?
I don't see why not. There seems to be little more information that can be gathered here.
Matt stayed for a moment to give the maid some instructions as Kitty and the inspector walked back along the corridor and down to Mrs. Treadwell's suite. He caught them up outside the door as Kitty produced the key to let them into the suite. Matt was relieved to see that everything in her grandmother's rooms appeared untouched. Kitty sat next to him on the sofa, after calling down to reception for a tea tray.
Did you find anything of interest at Hubert Fargin's lodgings? Matt asked, once the tea had arrived and the maid dismissed.
Inspector Greville stroked his moustache thoughtfully, before helping himself to a biscuit.
Nothing very conclusive. No indications that he had heard or seen anyone.